Hello and welcome into this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Little old me, Mark Congleton, sitting here behind the mic, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you and yours had a fantastic weekend and that you're looking forward to a great Monday. It is Monday, the 15th day of June 2020. And life has been just as insane over the weekend as it was last week. With people burning things, shoving down statues, marching in massive throngs. And then people fretting over Donald Trump having a rally. Not saying a word about the throngs of people gathered, but they're a little upset about Trump starting rallies up again. Oh, well. Anyway, here we are, back here on another Monday. And I don't know how your weekend went, but ours was, it was rather uneventful. I'm trying to think of if there was anything monumental that happened over the weekend. Not really. Aside from, let's see, I was very, very busy the last few days. I've mowed grass. I've worked on appliances. I've done all kinds of things in the last week. And over the weekend, I spent some time giving some TLC to the little old Miata that's in our garage. And I've been working on the windows. The windows have gotten to where they've moved. It's just like, hey, wait a minute. Holt, I know you want the window up, but I'm very old and it's going to take some time. And it's just, they're so slow. And I've been researching answers and digging into things. And... you know, it's funny when you own an old car like that. It's about to be 30 years old. Next year, I'll be able to buy a vintage plate here in the state of Alabama. And that's the last license plate I'll have to buy. But it's that old. It's old enough to get a vintage car plate. But the thing is that when you look for parts for something like that, you need to go to a junkyard or eBay, and people are kind of proud of those parts. Now, in a junkyard, you can get things cheap, but you're taking your chances. You just don't know. You know, sometimes it may all look great, and then you get it back and start working on it to put it on the car, and it's not all you thought it was. But and then there are the aftermarket sites who, well, here's an example. I've been working on the windows, trying to get them to roll up and down faster. And the research tells me that one of the problems is that the little channels that guide the window up and down over time get clogged up with different kinds of grease. People lubricate them to make them move. And after a while, that stuff starts solidifying. It just gets gross. And so you have to clean those channels out and lubricate them anew with something that is less likely to have the same end result. And so I started doing that and noticed that one of these little guide wheels, these little nylon guide wheels that run in these channels, one of them's gone, completely gone. Now, that window runs fast. The other one, not so much. And that proved to me, okay, the guide wheels and the channels are clogged up, but I need a new guide wheel for that one that's missing. So I went online and I did a search. And for two little 1-inch diameter, I'm telling you, it's an inch in diameter. It's about a quarter of an inch thick. Got a 3/8-inch hole in the middle of it. It's a little spacer, basically, a little nylon wheel. $24.95 for two of them. $25 for two little pieces of nylon. Or Delrin, I should say. You can get them made out of Delrin, which is really hard and really tough. And those are $24.95. But the originals, if you want to get original equipment, they're $30. That's just crazy for something that I could literally hide in the palm of my hand and you would never know I had it on my person. $30. And then I started finding little notes on owner threads in forums that you can go to Lowe's and buy these little nylon spacers from Lowe's, two of them for $1.50. They're almost exactly the same thing. You just have to widen one side of the hole a bit so the flared screw will settle down into it. And I thought, bing, sold. So that's what I did. So we did that yesterday afternoon. That kind of was the highlight of the weekend. Woohoo! That, and I went to see my buddy Mike, who's just had surgery. And So I drove the little car out to the countryside to visit Mike and to see how he's doing and to grab a belt for the mower because he works on this kind of stuff. And good news, he's doing well. He's up and around. But that's I haven't gone into detail. That's kind of a personal thing. I'm not going to tell you about his private life. But he did have some surgery. He's not going to be venturing too far from the house for the next couple of weeks. But he's doing good, and I'm glad that's happening. So here we are at Monday. I'm trying to have a positive attitude about Monday. So how about this?
Oh, Monday! Thank gosh it's Monday, my number one day. Back in the saddle at work I can shine. I love the rat race and the starting line is Monday. Thank gosh it's Monday.
Ah, SpongeBob.
Sing with me, Gary.
Wait, what? Hold on, wait a minute, what? What? Wait, what? What? Nickelodeon is suggesting now that SpongeBob SquarePants is gay? Oh, come on. Seriously? He's a cartoon character. According to Daily Wire, in the wild, sea sponges aren't known to have sexual preferences, but according to a tweet by children's programming network Nickelodeon, at least one cartoon sponge might practice an alternative lifestyle. Oh, this is bad news. Oh, no. In a missive marking the beginning of Pride Month, Nickelodeon introduced a rainbow-colored version of their hit cartoon character SpongeBob SquarePants, showing the anthropomorphic yellow sea creature dressed in his typical outfit of a white shirt and brown pants, but with the addition of a tie printed with the LGBTQ Pride flag. The network said in the tweet, quote, "Celebrating hashtag Pride with the LGBTQ plus community and their allies this month and every month." Although the tweet doesn't explicitly say SpongeBob is gay, the two other rainbow character treatments released alongside SpongeBob are of queer characters, according to the New York Post. Korra from The Legend of Korra, who is bi, and the transgender actor Michael D. Cohen, who plays Schwoz from Henry Danger. TMZ writes, "Fans have known for a while Korra is gay, bisexual, as it is revealed in the show itself and actually written into the script. Again, not so much with words, but just action. As for Schwoz, the actor who plays him, Michael D. Cohen, is a transgender man in real life, something that wasn't revealed until recently. He transitioned decades ago. Now, when it comes to the Krusty the Krab fry cook, well, let's just say folks had their suspicions for a long time now. If you know, you know. We won't break it down for boomers." Oh, thank you, you ignorant millennialist. This is kind of crazy. As I said before, SpongeBob SquarePants is a cartoon character. And they're having to really, really, really stretch to make this connection. Fans of this cartoon, it started airing back in 1999, have long suspected SpongeBob is gay. Now, when I say fans, the article says fans, but I would say woke fans who live in an alternate universe have long suspected SpongeBob to be gay. In an episode in 2002 called Rockabye Bivalve, SpongeBob and his best buddy Patrick the Starfish, they parented an abandoned scallop like a married couple. It was a cartoon. It was a gag. Social media fans of SpongeBob were also quick to point out that the sea sponge is a queer icon, especially after an extended run on Broadway. Well, okay. Of course, SpongeBob's sexual orientation would be a surprise to his creator, Steven Hillenburg. Hillenburg called the cartoon sponge asexual in an interview with People magazine back in the early 2000s, seemingly chastising viewers for ascribing any type of orientation to a perpetually childlike cartoon character. He said, "We never intended him to be gay. I consider the," he's talking about SpongeBob and Patrick, said, I consider them to be almost asexual. We're just trying to be funny, and this has got nothing to do with the show. Nickelodeon, which aired SpongeBob SquarePants, reportedly agreed with Hillenburg's assessment of his characters. Hillenburg, though, gave the interview in a less woke time. He passed away in 2018 of ALS. And that, of course, leaves the character open to interpretation. Why? Because he is not here to correct the woke bird brains. That's why. SpongeBob is just a goofy, childlike, enthusiastic character who gets into silly situations on a cartoon TV show. But what we're witnessing here is the LGBTQRSTUVW, these people trying to take ownership of something that is not. It's a cartoon character. It's a silly, absurd cartoon character. That's all it is. He gets into silly, absurd situations on his cartoon show. It's not real. See, those are the three words that you need to remember, friends. It's not real. I almost feel like Sheriff Woody talking to Buzz Lightyear. You are a toy. It's not real. It's a cartoon show. And all of these people trying to take some sort of twisted sexual ownership of a cartoon character just speaks to how desperate and sad this entire situation is. Because if you have to take ownership of a cartoon show for the sake of your cause, then how desperate are you? It's really sad. And I guess this may be the most absurd item of the day. And it's just a little bit on the crazy side. I've watched so many. I have to admit, I've watched a lot of SpongeBob SquarePants. I used to sit in the living room in front of the TV and just chuckle. Because it was so ridiculous. It was so funny. I used to really enjoy it. It's been a while since I watched them. Not fresh anymore to me. Not that funny. I can't even go back and look at them. But I can go back and watch old TV shows like, Frasier.
Yeah, hello. My name's Roger, and I am a resident of the nation of Chaz. I'm having a bit of a crisis. All of my conflict-free, locally sourced food storages were raided by a band of steampunks. And my U.S. currency is no longer recognized in the Chaz. I'm getting a lot of text messages from my biological guardians, whose basement I recently liberated myself from. But now I have no food, and I'm thinking about reaching back out to them for some aid. Does that compromise my status as a non-binary, full-core, anti-fascist, male-feminist, non-patriarchal, intersectional ally?
Roger, at Cornell University, they have an incredible piece of scientific equipment known as the tunneling electron microscope. Now, this microscope is so powerful that by firing electrons, you can actually see images of the atom, the infinitesimally minute building block of our universe. Roger, if I were using that microscope right now, I still wouldn't be able to locate my interest in your problem.
Yeah, I think that says it all. Man, I'm in. I'm. The link to that will be in show notes today. Trust me, it will be in the show notes today, so you can enjoy it yourself. You have to see the video as well, because there's video. A guy who has a Twitter account calls it Matt's Ideas Shop on Twitter. If you don't follow him, you should. He puts out some of the funniest memes, and that is one of the most recent ones, and it's just precious. And I'll make sure the link is in today's show notes for you. I'll also share it to the social media accounts of Facebook and Twitter, so you can go look at it. It's just great. Love that TV show, mainly because of the radio background. But the characters were great. The development of the characters was great. You got invested in these people and the crazy things that happened to them. And Kelsey Grammer, good conservative guy. Even with the tunneling electron microscope, I couldn't find my interest in your problem. And speaking of the Nation of Chaz, they put out a list of, on Reddit, they put out a list of things that they're working on. I'm not going to go into it today, but you should look it up. It's worth it. It's worth reading, because the further into it you read, the less angry you become and the more you start laughing. Because these people are clearly not connected to the real world. Oh my. I think I need some coffee. It's the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. It's good to have you along. Thank you so much for being there. I appreciate the fact that you drop in on Facebook or subscribe and listen every day. Thank you again. Well, it looks like Creepy Uncle Joe has narrowed his reported list of vice presidential contenders down. Second round of vetting. Several black women in contention. That's what the Associated Press is saying. Democrats, quote, with knowledge of the process, end quote. And I have to do that in quotes because that's just reporting at its finest right there. They won't say who it is. They won't actually go as far as giving it any real credibility. But the Associated Press will tell you, oh, well, it's people we know who know. It's people we know things. Do they know things? I mean, what else do they do besides know things? Do they have umbrellas? Do they feed penguins? What? I mean, they have knowledge of the process. They told the Associated Press that Biden's search committee has whittled its search down to 6 serious contenders after the first round of interviews. The list includes 2 of Biden's former opponents in the Democratic primary, Senators Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Kamala Harris of California. Susan Rice, President Obama's national security advisor, is also on the list. Florida Representative Val Demings and Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, both of whom are black, are being looked at for the position, along with New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. The list remains fluid, however, according to insiders, and additional candidates could be asked to submit to the extensive document review process of top contenders. Now, Biden, back in March, did promise to pick up a female running mate. Maybe I shouldn't have said pick up. To choose a female running mate. But following the death of George Floyd, the former vice president has faced increasing pressure to put a woman of color on the ticket. When Biden met with community leaders, Reverend Shanika Perry, youth pastor of Bethel AME Church, said that representation matters and offered advice for picking a running mate. Quote, "Let me go on record and say we want a black woman. We have qualified black women who are able, who are capable of helping you lead this country." End quote. But Biden, in an interview with CBS News that aired Tuesday, said that the events of the past couple of weeks haven't impacted him as he decides who he'll name as the party's VP nominee, except it's put a greater focus and urgency on the need to get someone who is totally simpatico with where I am on matters such as the systemic things that you want to change. You know the thing. So, they're telling him representation matters. Can I translate that phrase for you, that term, that terminology, representation matters? It is optics. It's style over substance. That's what it is. Whenever you see and hear politicians saying, I want a cabinet or a team that looks like America, Well, unless you've got a team of about 100 people and you can really make things work mathematically, that's going to be tough. But when they say things like representation matters, what they're actually saying is you had better put a black female on your cabinet. Now, I can tie this back to what I mentioned right before the break, and that was what's happening in Chaz, or is it CHOP? I can't remember now. I think they've changed it. But what's happening in Chaz in Seattle and their demands, and I told you, you need to go look that up. I'll see if I can find it and stick it in the show notes today. No promises, but I'll see if I can find it for you. But the list of things that they're demanding, the things that they're doing with this, with the, you know, as far as running things, who will be responsible for running things, and the conditions they put on this group of people, the representation that is there. Representation matters. And when you look at it, they want X number of people of color. They want X number of convicted felons. They want X number of this. Representation matters. That is a leftist thing. It's not qualification. It's representation. They say, well, we have qualified black women who are able, who are capable of helping you lead this country. That's what they say. Well, where were they in the presidential campaign? Because that should be your litmus test. That should be your yardstick for measuring effectiveness and capability. Wouldn't you think? Someone who could stand up to that pressure, someone who could answer that on a daily basis, wouldn't you think that would be who should be, who that should be the pool he's choosing from, that pool, those people who were willing to shoulder the burden of the presidency. And I say that as a conservative and thinking that way, but that's not what these people are thinking. Trust me, when it comes to the left, the person in the Oval Office is just the front man. So he talks about, let's go back up here. There we are. Elizabeth Warren, not a black female. Kamala Harris, yeah, she's there, but only sort of kinda, because she is not actually, I mean, she's more Jamaican, I would say, but she toes the line. She talks the talk. She plays the game, and she plays the race card. And she's been caught lying about things, but not as much as Elizabeth Warren has. So you've got Elizabeth Warren, who's a liar, and you've got Kamala Harris, who had an affair to get her foothold into the political process with a married man, by the way. And those would be your two choices coming out of that political race. Where are the rest of them? These other people didn't get up there and step into the foray. Because you have to remember that that VP slot's important. It's extremely important. Because if anything happens to the president, the VP is the next in line. And the VP is calling shots and making decisions in Congress as well. Tie-breaking votes and the like. So, the VP choice is extremely important. And for those of us who have been following and seeing, watching Joe Biden whenever he speaks in public, when he has these things going on and he has to go off script and actually think, watching his performance, I would say that if, by some bizarre, weird fluke, Joe Biden actually won, then the person who is in the VP slot is actually going to wind up being president. Because Joe Biden is struggling. The coronavirus did him a huge favor by keeping him out of the public eye. He's been sequestered in his basement doing video. And we've seen some of that. And it hasn't been good. So the person he chooses for VP is extremely important. And Democrats, not Republicans, not conservatives, but Democrats should be paying attention to that VP choice. Because that person is who is going to be their president eventually. And that's why some people are still saying that Hillary Clinton is angling for that slot. Some. But he's making it about representation rather than qualification. Because it's all about style over substance. It's all about optics. It's all about imagery. It's all about appearance. Not about qualification. And that's an important lesson to learn about the left. The left is all about that appearance. The left is all about the optics. Remember that photo op with Nancy Pelosi and those leaders from the Senate wearing African colors, those fabrics and patterns, kneeling for 8 minutes and 40 something seconds? You remember that? Do you honestly think that most of those people really care? And that if they cared, they might have done a little research on the fabric patterns they were wearing? They don't care. But they sure hope you do. Hop in the DeLorean and get ready. Time to get back into the podcast. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective, Monday, June 15th, 2020. About halfway through this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. And speaking of absurdity, social media is absurd. And I wish most people realized and remembered that Twitter and Facebook are not the real world, especially Twitter. Twitter is this place where cowards gather to insult people that they don't like and to make brave stands for issues that they really know very little about. And Facebook oftentimes is not much better. And over the weekend, I made a comment on something on Facebook, and I'm pulling it up now because it just occurred to me. Wow, this will tie into what I want to talk about next. And wow, scrolling slow. Yeah, here we go. I commented. Let me just read you what I wrote here in my post. And if you follow me on Facebook, you've seen this already. But if you haven't, this is for you. A few days ago on my personal Facebook account, I commented on an article about Alabama Senator Doug Jones. He was voting to change the names of military bases, which are named for Confederate soldiers. Somebody there had commented that Jones was on the right side of history in doing so. And my comment to that was there wouldn't be any history if leftists keep erasing what offends their delicate sensibilities. Someone from Atlanta, whose profile picture features Black Lives Matter, responded to me, to my particular comment, erase it all. Those three words, erase it all. Well, those seeking to erase our history have chosen to believe the lies of leftism. They believe that everything must be burned to the ground and a new societal structure built in its place based on leftist ideology. One need look no further than Seattle to see why this is a fool's dream. Inside Chaz, life isn't what the radicals hoped it would be. They're taking to social media to beg for supplies because the homeless have taken all of their food. They're planting gardens, but the homeless are dancing on the plants. They produce nothing, but they believe they deserve everything. It's typical leftist ignorance. If we allow the useful idiots to erase history rather than learn from it, we will produce more ignorant people like this ignoramus from Atlanta, willing to burn society down because their radical revolutionary idols tell them to do so. They won't know what the bright future they've been sold has been trod, that the bright future has been, that what they've been sold has been tried and failed every time because it's deeply flawed. Because every radical revolutionary in the past who has tried it has also ignored the lessons of history. Some of them ended up murdering millions of people in the pursuit of their perfect society. History isn't there for us to like or agree with. It's there for us to learn from. If we erase it, nobody learns. And that was pretty much my response, at least on the Daily Perspective page to that. Now, my back and forth with him was essentially the same, but it was interesting what he had to write to me. And I'm pulling back here to see. I'm trying to find it. There we go. I'm not going to give you his name. I just want you to see, to hear what he actually wrote. Let's see. The history you speak of, he says, is half or maybe even a third of the story. What about the other side? Let's remove the oppressors and tell the history from the oppressed point of view. We can learn from that! Exclamation point, exclamation point. Acknowledgement and monuments are different. Slavery was acknowledged. Those who enslaved were given monuments. And then he names me and says, hey, tell me, what have you learned from history to present? What's going on from your perspective? Why does the black community have an issue with Trump's kickoff rally date in Tulsa? Well, before he changed it, I'm curious to see your display, you display your knowledge of history. To which I responded, I stand by my statement. History, all of history, is there for us to learn from. Erasing it isn't the answer. Teaching all of history in accurate context is necessary for building a realistic future for all. Context is vital. Those oppressors included black landowners as well. Will you teach about them or leave them out of the picture? Those oppressors, in the context of that time in history, were doing something that was common and widely accepted around the world, even though today we look back on it as horrible. We look back and learn from those times and never allow it to happen again. But to continue fighting slavery in every form today, are you this passionate about the current plight of slaves in North Korea, Uzbekistan, Cambodia, India, and Qatar? And then in a separate response, because I couldn't let this, the thing about the rally date go by, I wrote to him, of course you're referring to Juneteenth. Please don't take offense from this. But if you step outside of your social circle, you'll discover that most Americans only have a hazy knowledge of the importance of this day to black Americans. This isn't because of any racial prejudice, but because most Americans aren't black and, like all Americans, tend not to pay attention to things which don't directly relate to their lives. As an illustration, there's more to that, but as an illustration, I was sharing this with my wife, and I mentioned the name of that particular day, Juneteenth. And her eyebrows jammed together, and she looked at me and said, what's that? And I dare say that if you sit around with folks at the barbecue over the weekend and say casually, hey, did you know that this week is Juneteenth is this week? Almost everybody in your social circle will look at you and say, what's that? Because most people don't understand what it is or why it's significant to the black community. Why? Because most of your friends don't live in the black community. That's why. Now, over at PJ Media, there's an article about this whole kerfuffle with Juneteenth. Donald Trump was going to hold a rally to restart his campaign in Tulsa on June 19th, but he and his campaign didn't imagine the blowback from the black community because the date of the rally coincides with Juneteenth, a holiday that commemorates the date in 1865 that President Lincoln's order to free American slaves reached Galveston, Texas. Okay. Keep in mind, this is not the day of the order. This is the day the order reached Galveston, Texas. This is not just, you would think, I would think, that we would, were I in the community that we would celebrate the day Lincoln made it official. But it's the day it reached Galveston, Texas, not the day he made it official. So the Trump campaign is moving the date of the rally one day to June 20th. Prior to scheduling the rally, the president's campaign aides had considered the political impact of holding a rally on Juneteenth and just dismissed the ramifications. But the killing of George Floyd and resulting riots and unrest changed the political calculus, and that made change necessary. And Trump tweeted, we'd previously scheduled our mega rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma for June 19th. A big deal. Unfortunately, however, this would fall on the Juneteenth holiday. Many of my African-American friends and supporters have reached out to suggest we consider changing the date out of respect for this holiday and in observance of this important occasion and all it represents. I've therefore decided to move our rally to Saturday, June 20th, in order to honor their requests. And there was talk, and he did say that if it was held on that day, it could be very important. Because on that day, at that rally, he actually could talk about Juneteenth and the history of the emancipation of the slaves. He could talk about the fact that it was the Republican Party and Abraham Lincoln. The Republican Party was founded to abolish slavery. All of this could have happened if the rally had happened on that day. But out of sensitivity, he said, no, we'll move it back a day. The writer of the article, let me scroll back up, Rick Moran, the writer of the article says, I don't want to seem racially insensitive, but I wonder how many Americans were even aware of Juneteenth as a holiday. The significance of the date is manufactured. Slavery ended with the proclamation of the 13th Amendment in December of 1865. That's what I was referring to earlier. I suppose it's a matter of perspective, he says, but the politics of the rally date dictated its move to June 20th. Some Democrats accused the president of deliberately selecting June 19th and Tulsa for his rally in order to antagonize African Americans amid the George Floyd protests. But the president insisted Friday that wasn't the case. You know, people on the left are trying to assign nefarious reasoning to everything the president does. If you're a news junkie or an information junkie like I am, you see all of this stuff and you find yourself rolling your eyes a lot. Because it's like a bunch of high schoolers, a bunch of teenaged people saying, see, he meant to do that. See, he did that as an insult to the whole class of people. See that? And they read this negativity into everything. They find, like, they're looking for demons behind every bush. And the thing is that, yeah, the demons are there, but they're looking in the wrong place. The people who are really oppressing people and working against them are those people who took the photo op the other day wearing those African colors. Those people, they're the ones lying to everyone, telling them the things that they want to do for them, knowing they can't do those things because they're unconstitutional. They're the ones who are lying, saying that they're going to level the playing field when the playing field is already level. Oh, Mark, the playing field's not level. Yeah, it actually is. It actually is. And the sad thing is, there are members of the black community who are doing more harm to the black community than anybody else. My wife and I know a sweet lady who's been trying to get a home loan for a long, long time, and she's dealing with an agency inside her community. Sweet little black lady. And those people are scamming her left, right, up, and down. And it's really sad to watch. Those people are the ones making it harder on everybody.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome.
Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Monday, the 15th of June, 2020. Heading into the final segment of today. Busy day for yours truly. Got to be heading out right after the podcast. I have two sessions outside today. I'm trying to decide whether or not to take the little car. There is a slight chance of rain today, 20% chance. I've got the top down. I've got the tonneau cover on it. I've been in this situation before where it rains. I'm going to be inside. I'm going to be the car parked outside. I'm going to be inside for a while. And there's that chance, you know, there's just that chance that it's going to rain while I'm inside. And if the top is not up, then it's going to be a soggy ride home. It's just, and so what's the solution? You put the top up, raise the windows, and you seal it in. That's okay. I guess I could do that. But I've also got some errands. I got to pick some bulky stuff up on the way home. So I think I'm just going to rule that out. I almost convinced myself, yeah, you know, you can take that and just put those big things in the, you can put a couple of them in the front seat and might be able to get one of them in the trunk. But the more I think about it, no, I think I'll just leave it in the garage because I got to work on it after I get home anyway. It is auto week for me. It started last week. I was working on brakes. I've got more brake work to do on another car, and I've got the window stuff to take care of on the Miata today. So I've got those parts. So we'll see how it all pans out, but I think I'm going to take the big air-conditioned vehicle instead of the little hot car. I just think I am. First world problems. Well, in Atlanta, Georgia, you're probably up to this. You're up to speed already on this about what happened with the fatal shooting in Atlanta outside of a Wendy's and the community. And of course, they responded by burning the Wendy's down. It had nothing to do with the Wendy's. The Wendy's had no problems. I mean, there was nothing happening there. The Wendy's, by the way, was black owned and they still burned it down. Way to go, guys. That's helping your community tons. And it's a sick, twisted situation. And now the body cam video has been released. An officer has been fired. The police chief resigned before that happened. She resigned because she wouldn't fire the officer because he was following policy and protocol. And there are many who are saying, yeah, well, they killed him for being drunk. No. Just to get you up to speed, this guy was so drunk, he passed out in the line at Wendy's. He's behind the wheel, that drunk. That's item one. The exchange between him and the cops was absolutely fine up to a point. If you watch the body cam video, you can see they were treating him with respect. They were explaining things. Hey, buddy, are you all right? Just checking on you. You were asleep at the wheel here, man. And it progressed. We need to check you and make sure that you're okay to drive. If you're not okay to drive, you don't need to be on the road. And they made it all very plain to him. And when they did the test on him and told him, look, man, you're too drunk to drive. We're going to have to, I mean, you're out here driving drunk. We're going to have to take you in. And they turned him around and started to put the handcuffs on him. He resisted and fought with them. And let me just run through this. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation released a body cam and surveillance video that show the scenes that led up to the death of Rayshard Brooks, who was shot and killed by a police officer following a struggle at a Wendy's in Atlanta on Friday night. Two police officers were responding to a call at a Wendy's in Atlanta about a man sleeping in a parked car in the restaurant's drive-through lane, forcing other customers to drive around the car. At approximately 10:30 p.m. on Friday, an officer repeatedly knocks on the window of the driver's side door, but the man inside the vehicle is unresponsive. After not responding, one of the police officers opens the car door and says, "What's up, my man? Hey, man, you're parked in the middle of a drive-through line here." And Brooks doesn't respond. The cop then taps Brooks on the arm to wake him. "Hey, are you all right?" Brooks wakes up. The two Atlanta police officers, Garrett Roth and Devin Brosnan, question Brooks about his night and if he's consumed alcohol. Brooks said he wasn't feeling right. He told officers that it was absolutely safe for him to operate a vehicle. 27-year-old Brooks originally told police that he had 1.5 margaritas. Minutes later, he told officers he wasn't sure what he drank that night. Brooks agreed to take a breathalyzer. While the one cop is getting the breathalyzer from the police SUV, the other officer tells Brooks, quote, "We're just trying to make sure, man, you're safe to drive, that's all." Brooks replied, "I know, man." The officer told Brooks, "You scared me a little bit because you were sleeping in there, so that's why I was making sure you were okay." And Brooks responded, I know, you're just doing your job." After seeing the results of the breathalyzer test, the police officer told Brooks, "I think you've had too much to drink to be driving. Put your hands behind your back." The two cops attempted to handcuff Brooks, and he resisted. A physical confrontation ensued as the police attempted to restrain Brooks. One police officer warned Brooks that he was going to be tasered if he continued to resist. At one point during the altercation, a cop can be heard yelling, "Hands off the taser." Brooks runs away from the police, and one cop tells the other one, "He's got my effing taser." The body cam fell off the officer during the struggle in the video. You can hear a taser being fired, and then several gunshots clap out. A video taken by witnesses, a witness in the parking lot, shows Brooks taking the officer's taser and punching the officer in the head. The GBI, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, released surveillance video from the Wendy's where the incident took place. The footage shows Brooks running from police in the parking lot. While running, Brooks points the taser towards officers. There are shots fired, and Brooks falls to the ground. Brooks was shot by police and taken to the hospital where he died. One of the officers was treated for an injury and released. Rolfe, who shot and killed Brooks, has been terminated. The 27-year-old was hired by the Atlanta Police Department in October of 2013. Brosnan has been placed on administrative leave. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation says during the arrest, the male subject resisted and a struggle ensued. The officer deployed a taser. Witnesses report that during the struggle, the male subject grabbed and was in possession of the taser. It has also been reported that the male subject was shot by an officer in the struggle over the taser. The GBI launched an investigation into the police shooting at the request of the Atlanta Police Department. Once that investigation is completed, the case will be turned over to prosecutors. Atlanta's police chief Erica Shields voluntarily stepped down on Saturday. And I think I stated this before, the reason she stepped down was because higher-ups insisted that an officer be fired, and it was premature. She said she would not, and she stepped down. Chris Stewart, an attorney for Brooks' family, said he left behind 4 kids, 3 daughters, and a stepson. And, of course, everybody now is armchair quarterbacking. None of them were there. Many of them have not seen the body cam footage or any of the other footage. They have not heard the audio. Many of them are just knee-jerk reacting, not responding, having been informed. If you've seen the body cam footage, you've seen the fight. You've seen the secondhand footage, you've seen the fight. You've seen how things played out. You see a guy turn, point something with a laser on it at police officers. You can hear the taser deploy, and then there are gunshots. The armchair quarterbacks are saying this could have been handled better. You could have done this or that or this other thing. Should have, could have, would have, but you are not the one who's been trained in these situations. You are not the one wearing body armor to protect your life because your job is so dangerous you have to. You are not the one who has just been punched in the head by someone violent who is resisting arrest and has taken a weapon off of your partner. You are not the person whose training kicks in when you were fired at. All you're doing is knee-jerk reacting to this situation. based on your preconceptions. This is why I encourage people to wait. Not to jump into this, into a situation like this, and make a judgment. Because you don't have enough information to make a complete judgment. Unlike the person who insisted that this police officer be fired, this person who insisted the police officer be fired did so for political purposes, for style over substance, for the optics, for the imagery. Well, police officer kills a black man, we're going to fire him because that's just not right. It doesn't matter what the situation is. Now, I realize that had they just let him run, being as drunk as he was, they would have found him, they would have had his car, and he would still be alive today. But this man did something that ended his own life. He turned a weapon on a police officer. And that never ends well. And sadly today, people are so emotional, they can't see reason. And that's it for me. That's my finish line for the day. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.